Okay, we are going to start from the two dots. Again, the two dots of Kohanim and Levim. It's about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about 10 lines at the bottom. The Mishnah said, if a woman said Kohanim and Levim denimli, yitlu bal karchai. They take it anyway. Dr. Gemara. Now, let me make two introductions that we're going to be using all day today again. Not all day, but part of the day. Number one, when a woman is banning her Anor, the Karnaira, and Rishon Mizama, they all speak out, she means, I'm not going to take money from people. Anything that's an ownership of money, but favors, she's willing to take. So therefore, if she can't take, if a Kohen and a Levi can't take, if they can take his Truma Meiser, that means you're saying that the Tavis Hanah, that the right of giving it, is not considered money. It's a favor, right? It's like being a Gabbai of Gemach, being a Gabbai at Tzedakah. You can decide which money to give it to, but you have no ownership in that money. So that by the fact that it says that if she bans all Kohanim and Levim to take it, right? If any man bans all Kohanim and Levim, they can take it against his will. That means that he has no monetary ownership in it. And therefore, they can take it because it's only a favor. And since he banned everybody, so now he doesn't own anything in it, right? So therefore, they can take it. And it's going to be a contradiction to the next piece in the Mishnah. Let me see it inside. Alma, Tavis Hanah, the right to pick ain't a mammon, is not considered an ownership. A Masefa, Kahanim Elu Levim Elu, Nanimli Yitlu Acherim. That means these people can't get it. Now, Yitlu doesn't necessarily mean take it without his will. Yitlu can mean they receive it. Yitlu Acherim doesn't mean others take it. It means he can give it to others. So Yitlu Balkorchai means they take it whether he likes it or not. Yitlu Acherim means he gives it to others. Now the question is, but he can't give it to them. He can't give it to these Kohanim that he banned. Why? What are they going to receive from them? A favor? There's no favor to Tosser, only to give them money. He's not giving them any money. He's the Gabbai Tzedakah. He's just giving out Tzedakah money. Alma, Tavis Hanah is Mammon. So we see that the right of designation is considered that the owner owns part of the truma. He owns part of the miser. Therefore, he can give the whatever he wants, and it's considered money. So we have a contradiction. Is the truma owned partially by the owner? So then, since by any kahanim and any levim, they shouldn't be able to receive it because they're receiving money from him. And if you hold that they don't, it's not considered money, it's just a favor, so that even if he bans specific kahanim, they should be able to receive it because it's not money that he's giving them. It's only a favor. And favors were not bad. And for the Gemara, Amar Rav Yishai, like Kasha. It's not a Kasha, because Ha Rabbi Yishai, Rabbi Yehuda. He's going to bring the Machloikas, whether Tavis Hanah is Mammon or not. And Eino Chinami. This Mishnah contradicts itself. First half of the Mishnah holds, first case in that this part of the Mishnah holds, that it's not considered an ownership of money, it's just a favor, just like the Gabbai Tzedakah who designates. And the second part of the Mishnah says, no, the owner owns part of the Truma and part of the Meiser that he can pick whoever he wants. Is an ownership of money. It's a monetary ownership. We'll put it at 4% or 3% of the Truma is owned by the owner. And that gives him the right to pick whoever he wants. Zok the Gemara, the Tanya. Now we're going to bring the Machloikas, and we're going to try to show you that the Machloikas is about Tavis Hanah. At the end of the day, the Machloikas is not going to be about Tavis Hanah. Not that it can't be, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. So the Gemara will have to give a different teres to this contradiction. But at this point, the Gemara wants to say, you're right, the Mishnah is contradictory, but the halacha is, it doesn't bother us because it's two Tanoim. One Tana holds one way, and one Tana holds the other way. The Tanya. Hagoyin of Tivloi Shokhaveirai. Reuven goes and steals Shimon's grain before Trumas and Mises were separated. V'yachloi, and he ate it. So it's gone. Right? So he owes Shimon money. He stole grain. It's worth $1,000. And he ate it up. So now he owes Shimon $1,000. The answer is, Mishalom Lloyd made Tivloi Devei Rebbe. Rebbe says he pays him the whole $1,000. Rebbe Huda says it's not true, because there's going to be a certain percentage that Shimon's not going to keep anyway, that he has to give to a Kayan, he has to give to a Levi, and there, and Maisha Sheni, you can't say that, but Kayan and Levi, so therefore, he doesn't own $1,000 worth of grain here. He doesn't have ownership in $1,000 worth of grain. Let's say Truma Meister ends up being 12%. I'm just making it up. So let's say he only has to pay him 88% of the $1,000, because 12% of this grain wasn't staying by Shimon anyway. Rebbe says, no, he has to pay him the whole $1,000. Rebbe Huda says, he only pays him the Chulim part, the part that's going to remain by Shimon after he gives his obligations of Truma Meister. That's what the Machlokes says. What are they arguing about? Why shouldn't he pay the whole thing, or why should he pay the whole thing? The answer is, my love, the Havamina is, Bahokim Ifli. This is what they're arguing about. The Rabbi Sabar, famous Anomaman, Rabbi holds that Shimon owns the whole thing. Granted, he has to give the part of it to a Kayan and part of it to a Levi, but even in that, he has a monetary ownership. Grant not the whole thing, but part of it. So that has to be paid for. So according to this Havamina, he wouldn't necessarily pay him for the whole $1,000, but he wouldn't take off 12%. He would pay 88%, and then the part of Tavis Hanah. But Shimon has ownership in that remaining 12%. And for that ownership, he would have to pay Shimon, compensate Shimon for that loss. That's what Rebbe means when he says he pays the whole thing, meaning 88% which Shimon owns in totality, and whatever part Tavis Hanah is worth monetarily in the other 12%. Rebbe Huda says, no, Shimon doesn't own anything in that remaining 12%. He's a gabbai. As a gabbai, you don't have to compensate the gabbai for the dukkah money you stole. You don't have to compensate the truma and the meister. You want to talk to a kayan or a levy, that's your business. But as far as Shimon's concerned, he only owns 88% of this grain. And by the way, again, 88% is a made-up number, right? So he only owns 88% of this. So why pay him for something he doesn't own? So here's a machloikis tanoim, whether Tavis Hanah is considered money or not considered money. Zuck the rush. Rebbe Sabbat Tavis Hanah Mammon, the Kisarach Lashamli called Meitei HaTevel. He has to pay him the whole Tevel. Rebbe Yisrael Rebbe Huda Sabbat Lehavi Mammon, Hilkach Einachayv Lashalom, Loi Eladmei Chulim. He only has to pay him for the Chulim value. That's what the Gemara wants to say. Now, the Gemara doesn't say that it can't be that way. This is a possible explanation of the Machlokes. And if that is true, if you want to go with this explanation, then the answer we gave to the contradiction of the Mishnah is a valid answer. First part of the Mishnah held, Tavis Hanah is Mammon. The next case holds, Tavis Hanah is Eina Mammon. To Machlokes, Rebbe and Rebbe Yisrael, Rebbe Yehuda. One part of the Mishnah is Rebbe, and one part of the Mishnah is Rebbe Yisrael, Rebbe Yehuda. It is a valid, possible answer. But the Gemara now wants to offer you a different pshatim in the machloikas of Rebbe and Rebbe Yisrael Rebbe Yehuda. It's not that you have to say this is the machloikas. There are other options of learning the machloikas. But the Gemara is not saying you can't say this is the machloikas. The Gemara is saying you can't prove that this is the machloikas. There are other ways to learn the answer, the machloikas between the two. Dr. Gemara, look, there's no proof from here that that's the machloikas. Again, the Gemara is not taking away the possibility. Sometimes the Gemara brings up shot and says it's wrong. The Gemara here is not saying that to learn that the Machloikas is wrong. It's not wrong. It just might not be the right shot. It's a possibility, one of many possibilities. That's one. And now we're going to bring a second one, which the Gemara will slug up and go to a third or fourth one. So the Gemara tries four possibilities. We brought one. The Gemara is going to try a second and immediately slug it up, and then say a third, and then a fourth. Like, the Kula Alma Tavis Hanah Eina Mammon. It could be everybody agrees that the person does not own anything in that 12% of Truma Maisa. Meaning, like Rabbi Yaisi Rabbi Yehuda says, that you shouldn't have to pay for Tevel. Ella, Chacha B'Matanah Shaloi Hormu Kamiflagi. What happened was, the Truma and the Maaser have not been separated yet. It wasn't that he stole the Tevel and the separated Truma and the separated Maaser. He stole the Tevel before anything was separated. And therefore, the Gemara wants to say, and the Gemara is going to say it makes no sense, the Gemara wants to say, since it was still mixed in with the rest of the grain, we consider it all Shimon's, even though Shimon is ultimately going to have to give away 12%, but it hasn't been separated yet. Therefore, we look at this grain and we say, this is Shimon's grain. In reality, it's not Shimon's grain completely. He's going to have to give away 12% of it. But 88% is his, and the other 12% has not been separated. So we say, it's all Shimon's grain. And the Gemara immediately jumps on it and says, why should that make a difference? If you say that he has no ownership in the remaining 12%, what difference does it make? He doesn't own 100% of this grain. Who cares if it's separated or not separated? What kind of terrence is this? It doesn't make a difference whether it's separated or not. He doesn't own 100% of this grain. There's 12% here that he can't keep. That means he doesn't own it. So why in the world should it make a difference whether it was separated or not? That's the Gemara's question. Zuck the Rush. Now the Rush has a very big problem with this Gemara's attempt. Zuck the Rush. Zuck the Rush. Umihu, but the Perek Beis the Kedushin, in the second Perek of Kedushin, where the Gemara brings the same thing, Muki Plukayu Bahochi, the Gemara makes this a valid possibility. Now, how is it a valid possibility? What happened was, somebody gave a kayan grain, and he had not separated the truma. He gave him grain, and in the grain, you don't even have to say that. The kayan himself grew grain, his grain. And in his grain, he would have to separate truma and keep it. So unlike a Yisrael, who has to separate truma and give it away, the Kayan can separate the truma and keep it. He can separate the Maaser Rishon and keep it. He has a right to keep the whole 100% of the grain because he is allowed to eat truma, he's allowed to eat Maaser. So when a Kayan grows his own grain, he can separate truma and keep it, separate Maaser and keep it. So this Kayan had grain. He doesn't have to give it to Levi. A Kayan can keep Maaser. So this Kayan has 100% of the grain. He died before he separated the Truma and the Maaser. The one who inherited him was a grandson of Yisrael. His daughter's son was the closest relative, and he inherited his grandpa. Now he has to separate the Truma and the Maaser. Does he have to give it to a Kayan? Do we say the Kayan already had it? The Kayan already received it from himself. And therefore, he can't eat it because he's not allowed to eat Truma, but he can sell it to a Kayan. He doesn't have to give it away. His grandfather had it. And his grandfather, in the grain, was the Truma that ultimately would have been separated. We view it as if it was separated already. And the Kayan owned that 12%, and therefore his grandson owns the 12%, doesn't have to give it to a Kayan. He would have to separate it, and he can't eat it because he's Yisrael, but he could sell it to a Kayan. He doesn't have to give it to a Kayan. He owns this. His grandfather owns the whole 100%, but the Truma had never been separated. Now, if you view the Truma as if it was separated already, so then we say the Kayan owns 100%, He inherited it, he bequeathed it to his grandson, who now owns 100%, separates the truma, sells it to a Kayan. But the grandson is an owner of the 100%. If you say the truma has actually never been separated, so we don't view this as a Kayan's grain, because the Kayan never separated the truma. It was still Tevel. And therefore, when the Yisrael inherits it, he only inherits 88%, because the other 12% never was separated, therefore never belonged to the Kayan as Truma. It belonged to the Kayan as Tevel, and Yisro can't own that 12%. It was never given to a Kayan. because the Kayin never separated it. Had he separated it, it would have become his, and then his grandson could have inherited it. But he never separated it. So now the Yisroel has to go ahead and separate it and can't sell it to a Kayin. It was never his, because you can't inherit the Truma that it's never separated. Therefore, he would have to give it to a Kayin. So that's the Machlokes. Rebbe holds, you pay the whole thing. The Kayin owned 100%. It's like it was separated, and the Kayin kept it. He died, his grandson inherits it, and owns the whole 100%. Therefore, the Ganav who stole it has to pay 100%. Rebbe Yehuda says, since it was never separated, the Kayin didn't own the Truma yet. It was in there, but he didn't own it. So when he dies, his grandson inherits it, but he doesn't inherit the Truma part, because the Truma part was never separated. Now the grandson has an obligation to separate it, and he has to give it to a Kayin. Therefore, he only has to pay 88%. So this is a valid interpretation of the Machlokes. So the Gemara Kedushin uses this example and explains how it's a valid interpretation of the Machlokes, whether we view this Truma as being separated and the Kayin owned it or not. So the Gemarash, the Perik Beis the Kedushin, Muki Pultai Bahochi, the Gemara sets up the Machlokes on this, will be Yisroel Shenafnu Eitzvalu Mibeis Abiyim Kayin. It's the Yisroel that inherited Truma from his grandfather. According to the Mandam, it says it's like it's separated. The Kayin already owned it. The Ein Tzarech Litnam LeKayin, and the grandson doesn't have to give it to the Kayin. Well, the Mandam it lav kmisur madanyan, and the one that says we don't view it as if it's separated, loy zacha behem, the grandson doesn't own it. The Tzarech LeKayin mitzvah nesina, he has to be mekayin the mitzvah of giving it. Dr. Rush, the sugya d'hocha tamua ma'ayin, this, the Gemara here, is very severe. The Korkin Hamataritz, you have to say that the one who answered the Muki Blutayim and Matanish Loi Hormo, the one who wants to say that the Machlokes is if it wasn't separated, he Epshil Lefarchoi, Elekid Mefarish Lebe Kedushin. He cannot explain it, only like the Gemara says in Kedushin that it belonged to a Kayin. So how in the world, right, Bimkain, my Maxi Leisu, so why does the Gemara ask Mali Hormu, Mali Loi Hormu? If the answer, one who said the answer, meant the Gemara in Kedushin that a Kayin owns it, so then the next Gemara's question is not pushed fair. Of course there's a difference if it's separated or not, because did the Kayin owned it, did he own 100% or not? It makes a lot of sense. So why does the Gemara reject it out of hand? Zuk Darash, the custom of Rabbeinu, I don't know who Rabbeinu is, Shamak Shaloi Haven Divle Amitaritz, that the Gemara here didn't understand the answer like the Gemara in Kedushin. For the Chosh Lefarish Dvarav, and he didn't, the one who answered it, didn't decide not to take his time to explain his answer. So the one who said the answer that it wasn't separated. Now, before he had a chance to explain that it's talking about a Kayin, like the Gemara says in Kedushin, the person who was next to him said, who cares the difference? Now, the one who said the answer could have explained his answer. He decided not to explain his answer. He told him a different one. So the Rashi is saying something that if I would say it, I get thrown out of the base magic. He's saying that this Gemara never meant the answer the way it was understood, because it makes no sense. The one who answered it had a case where it made sense. It was owned by a Kayin who died, and his grandson, the Yisrael, inherited it. And the Gemara could have said that here. It would have made perfect sense. But what happened was, it was a conversation. Somebody said the answer, and before he had a chance to explain himself, somebody asked him, what difference does it make? Now, he could have told them, a Kayin owned it, he died, his grandson inherited it, it's a Machlokes, does the grandson own the Truma or not? He decided, I'm not going to bother with this. I'll tell him a different answer. So Mamela, Agamara's answer never had 2 feet to stand on because it was never explained. But if you look in Kedushin, the Gemara makes this a viable option, that the Kayin owned it, the Kayin died, and that the grandson inherited it. So the Gemara makes it a viable option. Here, the Gemara doesn't make it a viable option. It rejects it out of hand. So Zaktai Rush, Why didn't he answer it like he did in Kedushin? The answer, he decided, it's not worth my time. I'll give him another answer. Very interesting approach, but I don't know any other job.
Maybe he didn't know the Gemara there.
No.
It doesn't make sense. We're talking about Meroim, you know what I mean? We're not talking about... I mean, when the man said the answer, he must have meant the Gemara Kedushin. He knows it doesn't make sense any other way. It's an interesting thing that the one who said the answer decided not to explain himself, but to say a different answer. Zogt Gemara Vayter. Ella Hainu time at the Rebbe. Kansu Rabbanu.
Rabbi Cohen has a question.
I'm sorry?
Rabbi Cohen has
can't
a question.
Can't hear you?
Hear you.
I didn't hear you.
How can he owns it now, and later on, after it's separated, he's going to lose that ownership.
Well, the kid doesn't own it because he can't inherit the truma in it.
I'm not talking about the Gemara Kedusha. I'm talking about the Gemara here.
The Gemara here makes no sense. That's what the Gemara says. It makes no sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense because how do you own it, then lose it? That's the question. That's the problem, no?
No, it's not.
Before it's Hormu, how can you say that Tevel... What is it? Before it's Hormu, what is it?
Rabbi Cohen, what happens if Dr. Harris has a field? He grows $1,000 worth of grain. How much of that grain does he own?
88%.
Exactly. He doesn't own the 12%.
So,
now, Akayan, if you grew a field of $1,000 worth of grain, how much grain do you own? How much percent do you own before it's separated?
100%.
No, you don't. If you hold that Matanis Kamisho, it wasn't separated yet, so we say he only owns 8%, 88%. The other 12% he can't own yet, because it has to be Truma Meiser. Now, when he separates it, he will be able to keep it. But till he separates it, this 12% is not his yet. It's Tevel, and he has to separate Truma Meiser, so he doesn't own it. When he separates, it'll become his.
That's one opinion, right?
That's one opinion.
Right.
But if it's formal...
Now, the grandson is inheriting 88% because it wasn't separated yet. So he can't, but he can't get the 12% when it's separated because he's not a kayan.
I want to talk about Arkamor itself. Forget Kedushas for a moment. Well,
how can you make sense of a Gemara when the Gemara says it makes no sense?
But asking what until it's Hormu, it seems like you're until it's Hormu, you own the whole thing. No.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
Never the Gemara thought that.
Everybody agrees that if you hold Matan Shaloy Hormu, Lav Kamis Hormu. When Dr. Harris has a field, whether you hold Kamisa Hormu or Lav Kamisa Hormu, he only owns 88%. He can't own the other 12%. It's not his. Now, if you own the field, that's the machlokes of Kamisa Hormu, Lav Kamisa Hormu. If it's Kamisa Hormu, then you own 100% because you're a Kayan. If it's Lav Kamisa Hormu, you also only own 88%.
Fight.
Zogt Gemara. Hello, Zogt Gemara. I knew time at the Rebbe, Kutsur Rabbanu Magana. Everybody agrees that Taivas Anah is Mammon. Everybody agrees that you only own that Taivas Anah is Ein Mammon. Everybody agrees that the Yisrael, back to Yisrael, owns the field. He only owns 88%. So why should the Gadol pay 100%? Why does Rebbe say he pays the whole thing? The owner only owns 88%. The answer is, Kansur Rabbanan LeGadol. We punished him. He really shouldn't have to pay that extra 12%. But he's a Gadol. We're not so nice to Gadol. You stole 100%, you pay 100%. Aye, 12% wasn't going to be the owner's anyway. None of your business, Mr. Gadol. You stole, you pay. Don't you worry about who owns or what rights. None of your business. You're a Gadol. And we punish you. We make you pay the 12%, even though you really didn't have to pay it. And basically, Rabbi Yehuda holds, there's no such class. That's one answer. Now we say a second answer. Rabbi Yossi by Yehuda Savar, Kansur Rabbanu
Labai. Can I ask a question on, I'm sorry, can I ask a question on the one we just had before we move on?
Yeah, sure.
If it's a penalty to the Gadol, why should the owner get the full amount? He's being reimbursed for, I understand the punishment aspect, the deterrence aspect, but shouldn't that 12% go to the community instead of to the owner?
Okay, so this is a very interesting point. And by the way, not that I want to bring a raya, but it's true even in American law. When you pay punitive damages, who do you pay it to?
You definitely pay it to the victim, but that's the answer.
Right, you just said the answer.
Rabbi Yitzchak?
Somebody steals and gets caught, he has to pay double. Who gets the double? The victim.
To me, okay, I'm not going to argue the point. I get it. Okay.
Rabbi Margaret?
Okay. Yes.
Do you have your Gemara words, Ki Hei Chidol Olignov?
Yeah, I didn't read it yet. I'm sorry. Time is up. Rabbi Kedu Rabbanam Liganov, Ki Hei Chidol Olignov, so he shouldn't steal. Rabbi Yisrael Rabbi Yehuda Savar. Now, it sounds like one answer, but the Rush explains this is a new answer. Everybody agrees that the owner owes 100%. But Rabbi Yisrael Rabbi Yehuda says you only pay 88% because we're upset at the owner. He should never have left around the tevel without separating the Truma Miser. A person should separate the Truma Miser as soon as he can. This guy delayed it. We punish him that he loses the 12% because he delayed it. I'm sorry?
It's an assumption that he delayed it. Maybe he didn't delay it. Maybe he was very busy but doing something.
Usually, see, I'll tell you why it's a good assumption. People steal grain. It's talking in the case where he stole grain when it was already finished the process. And if he finished the process, what should happen is the Trumas and Maaser should be separated right away before he moves away from that pile.
His wife needed him right at that moment.
Okay, so that's not the regular case. The regular case is his wife needed him at that moment and he ignored her.
We're not talking 2025, eh? Okay, fine.
Right, Jay. Now, the Rush read this Gemara, and he saw one answer. Rabbi says, punish the Ganav. Rabbi Yossi Behuda says, punish the owner. And the Rush says, well, if you're punishing the Ganav, that means the owner deserves it. I'm sorry, if you're punishing the Ganav, that means the owner didn't deserve it. So why are we punishing the owner? He didn't deserve it. And if you're punishing the owner, that means you're not punishing the Ganav. Therefore, he says it's two separate answers. One answer is that the owner doesn't deserve it because Taibas Anna is not Mama. And therefore, he really should only get 88%, but we punish the Ganav. The next answer is the owner deserves 100%, but we punish him because he didn't separate it right away. Let's read the Russian side. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Sarva, Kansur, Rabbanu, Labama, Bais. Tema, Dr. Rush, I don't understand this. Ma'onit, Shichim, Iknazeb. Why do we need to punish the owner? Even the Taibas Anoi in a moment. Since you just said that we're punishing the Ganav, that means you said the owner doesn't own it. So we don't have to be punishing the owner. I mean, I did, Mr. Ganav. We're not punishing the owner. The owner never got more than 88%. The Nira, This is the second answer. Everybody agrees that the owner owns 100%. And the reason Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda patters the ganav, mishum the kansin on the balabayus. Rabbi Yisrael bekedushin behedra, and in kedushin the Gemara splits it up as two terutzim. Rishna the nedarim mishunahu. In midmesechus nedarim the Gemara does strange things, and this is one of the strange things it does. It doesn't separate the two answers. So it's in reality to understand the machlokes between Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda, we have four different.
Uh-oh. Rebbe's phone died. Rebbe, come back.
Rebbe, we cannot hear you.
Hit the mute button.
Okay, I muted it by mistake. I apologize. So at the end of the day, we have four different possibilities in the Machlokes Rebbe and Rebbe Yosef ben Yehuda. Number one, we have the possibility that Rebbe Yosef ben Yehuda holds Teves Hanah is not Mammon. Therefore, the owner only owns 88%, and Rebbe holds Tzivus Hanah is Mammon, therefore he owns the whole 100%. Really not 100%, but he has a right in the other 12%, a monetary right. The second tarot is the Gemara in Kedushin, which the Gemara doesn't explain here, that it's talking about a Kayan's grain. And the Machlokes is, do we view it as if it's separated, therefore the Kayan owns 100%, or we say it's not separated yet, and therefore the Kayan only owned 80%. And everybody holds that Tzivus Hanah is not Mammon. Third answer also says Tzivus Hanah is not Mammon. Therefore the owner only owns 88%, but we punish the ganav. And we say, you stole, you get punitive damages. The fourth answer holds that the owner owns 100%. Rabbi Yehuda says you only get 88% because we punish the owner for not separating Trumas and Maisers right away. Back to our Mishnah, we could leave the answer that part of the Mishnah holds Tzivus Hanah is Mammon, and part of the Mishnah holds it's not Mammon. Again, the first case said, if he bans all Kahanim and Levium, they can take it. That means he doesn't own part of it. Not if he owns it, how can they take it? And the second part of the Mishnah said, he has to give it to other people. That means obviously he does own it, because he can do them favors, he just can't give them money. And we view that as giving them money. Rav Amar, yes.
I mean, the fourth answer that you said, when he gets 100%, anytime he gets 100%, you say Tzivus Hanah is Mammon?
Yes. That means he owns the whole thing.
Right.
No, because in the case of the stealing, we said Tzivus Hanah is not money.
Again, we're offering different. No, you're right. We don't know whether Tzivus Hanah is Mammon or not. We're giving you four terutzim. In one, they argue whether it's Mammon. In the second and the third, they assume that it's not Mammon. And in the fourth, they assume it is Mammon.
Right.
We're going back and forth. We don't know.
Right.
We're offering you different possibilities. Rav Amar, a different answer to our contradiction. I'll speak it out outside, then I'll read it inside.
This is another fifth answer?
No, nothing to do. No, this has nothing to do with Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda. This is back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said if a guy bans all Kehanim, they take it. That means he obviously doesn't own anything in it. And the second part said if he bans certain Kehanim, he can't give it to them. That means he does own part of it. That was the contradiction in our Mishnah. You know what Rabbi answered? Rabbi says as follows. If a guy bans all Kehanim, what he's doing is he's making his right to pick the Kayan Hefker. By saying he can't give it to any Kayan, what he's saying is, I am giving up my monetary right to pick the Kayan. So now he doesn't own. Everybody holds Tzivus Hanah is Mammon, our Mishnah. And therefore, an owner owns the right, the monetary right. But if you give it up, just like you can give up your car, you can give up your chair, you can give up your table, you can make it Hefker. If you say no Kayan can get it, that means you're saying, I have no right, any monetary right in this truma. Because you can't have a monetary right that the Kayan can't get it. That means automatically, by banning all Kehanim, it's like you're saying, my monetary right that I had in this item, I'm giving up. So now the Kehanim can take it. You don't own anything anymore. You're making it hefker. You can't have a right, and you can't carry it out. You banned all kehanim. That means you're saying, I give up my monetary right. You can give up your monetary right in any item. It's called hefker. You're being masker, your type of sana. You're giving it up. Zag digamar rabba amar. Shiny truma. The hainu time at hitlu akarchai. Mishim the truma lechajal lekehanim. Truma is only fit for kehanim. Vekivin the asir lemeister alayu. Since he's coming to asir it on them. Shavya asir ba'alma. He makes his type of sana worthless. He's giving it up. It's like a piece of dirt. You can't have a type of sana if you can't carry it out. So therefore, you're saying, I give up my right, my monetary right. Zag derash. Rav Amar. Shiny truma. Pirish. The Ilam Taibas and Ramaman. The owner has a monetary right to pick the kayak. The Haida Kari Masnison. The Hitlu Bakarkai. The Leicha Shinan. The Taibas and Ramaman. And we said they can take it. We're not worried about it. But from the Kibin Shaasaras Kala Kehanam Bana. He banned all the Kahanim. He absolutely lit light. They can't, I'm sorry, it's supposed to be, they changed the gears to here. So, I'm sorry, I'm trying to find it. He absolutely lit light. He can't give it. Because he can't give it. L'shem Kayin, he can't give it to any Kayin. Therefore, V'ein Le'en Taibas Anah. He gives up his Taibas Anah. The absolute act with that's why he can't give it himself. It's like he doesn't have the type of sana anymore. Abu Seifa, Kibin Shiachar, Litna, the Kahanim Acherim. In the case when he only banned certain Kahanim, he can give it to other Kahanim. Yes, but type of sana, banned type of sana. He owns the right to pick the Kahanim. It's the monetary right. Therefore, he can give it to other Kahanim. But when he can't give it to any Kahanim, it's like saying, my right of type of sana, I've just given up. That's what he's saying. And therefore, everybody can take it.
Everyone holds a really Tovas Hanah is Mammon. Just in this case, once he said no one, you lost it.
Correct. Now, when I say everyone holds, it's very important what I'm going to say now. It doesn't mean in Shas everyone holds. It doesn't mean that. It means in our Mishnah, that's what everyone holds. Right. We're not picking sides in Shas now. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay. That's the mission of Iper.
The person who ushered it on Kohanim, not Mekayim Truma. He has to give a different Truma.
No, he does not. They took the Truma. He separated it, but he has no right of choice. He gave it up. So now any Kohen can come and take it.
Did you not usher the Truma on Kohanim?
You can't answer. I can't answer your money on you.
Okay.
I can only ask that I can't give it to you. I can't answer. It's not my money. Truma doesn't belong to me. All Tavis I know is the right to pick is of monetary value. I gave that up.
Thank you.
Zak the Mishnah. Kainim she'eni ais de'api abba. A woman says, I will never do anything for my dad. She made a neder, banning herself from ever doing anything for her dad. Or I'll be avicha, or your dad, she tells her husband. Or I'll be achi, I won't do anything for my brother. Or I'll be achicha, and I won't do anything, or I won't do anything for your brother. Eina yachol ha'afer. This is not inri nefesh. Not doing something for somebody is not inri nefesh. Right? It's not. And not doing somebody is not inri nefesh. At the same time, not beinoy lebeina, because it's really not about anything physical between them. It is he won't do for her. I'm sure he's not happy that she won't do anything for his father. But that's not really, he might be upset at her, but it's not something she's doing to himself or herself that affects their relationship in any way physically. It's a feeling kind of thing that if I, that I can't, it's not going to affect them between each other, except to feel that he might be upset at her. That's all. Rabbi Kiva, okay. Sorry?
This mission is also Rabbi
Yossi. No, this is the new mission. Yeah, this is Rabbi Yossi. This is Rabbi Yossi, but the truth is Rabbi Yossi would agree. There's no Idu Nefesh here. How is she afflicting herself by not doing for somebody else? Like, a woman says, I will not do for you. I will not earn something for her husband. Zukta Tanakama, Einut Sarak Lohafer. The husband doesn't even have to be mefer because she has a shibud to him. The shibud outrides the... Listen, a woman has to work for her husband. She's the shibud. She bans it. I hate to break the news to you, lady. Your netter can't work against the shibud. Rabbi Kiva Eimer, Yafer. Shemitah Devolov. Rabbi Kiva says he should be mefer because she might earn more than he's entitled to, because there's a machloikis who gets the extra, and Rabbi Kiva says it belongs to her, and that could she could ban on her husband, but the money gets mixed up, the basic and the extra gets mixed up. Husband can't live with a wife that he can't use some of her money and could use some of her money. Gets confusing. So Rabbi Kiva says that's beinai lebeina. It's going to affect their relationship. There's no way he can live without having using some of her money. He has money, so therefore he says, be made for it. Now the Tanakama holds, the extra belongs to him. And therefore it is just as like he can use her earnings, he's mishubah to give him the extra too. So this is the machlokes, who gets the extra? Rabbi Yechim ben Nuri Eimer, Yafer, Shem Yigashena. The netter is not chal now, but he might divorce her, but he has surala, and he won't be able to take her back, because this is a beinai lebeina. And as soon as he divorces her, the netter kicks in. Remember we said that? The netter kicks in. And therefore, he will be banned from taking her back. So therefore, he's allowed to be made for it now to allow him the possibility of taking her back after he divorces her. We had this earlier in the paper. Dr. Rush. Kainim sen yaisa picha in the circle in Yagulahafer. Dwayhavi dwarm shebeinai lebeina. That is not considered things between the two of them. She's answering it on other people. The Rabbanon strengthened his shibud that breaks netter. Now, the Rush says, in Ksubas, it says how much a woman is required to earn. And the rest she can donate to Hegdash. The Gemara answers that the extra is only hers if she works doubly hard to get that extra. Meaning if she earns more than the minimum, it belongs to the husband. But if she works extra hours or does two jobs at a time, then some people say it belongs to him and some people say it belongs to her. The Sabbath Rebbe Kiva did the day have it. It's, I think it's supposed to say, it's hers. The chawal of Hegdish. And when she makes it Hegdish, it's chaw. And that, the Efshalias, Shalayas Arab Bishalai. How can he keep the extra from getting mixed into what he's supposed to get? Yechim ben Nuri Sever, Ikim Ais Yedeh Tzarech Hafara, Shem Yigashena, he might divorce her, V'od Yochel HaNeder, V'Yochel HaZira. Then the netter will be chal, he won't be able to take her back. Therefore, he should be made for the netter right away.
Are her earnings subjective or objective?
I don't know what that means.
She makes a lot more money than other women. Does she owe all that money to her husband?
So that's a sugya in Ksubas. This Rush is explaining that if she didn't work more hours or double job, it would belong to the husband. It's only, the question only becomes if she exerts herself more than the norm. But if she earns more, it goes to the husband. Now, a woman has the option to say to her husband, don't feed me, and I won't work for you. She has that option. She can tell her husband.
Anytime during the marriage, she can change her mind?
Yeah. Anytime during the marriage, she can say one way and then change her mind. Correct.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Rabbi, according to...
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. According to Yochanan ben Nuri, had she said instead of "I will not work for you," if she had said "I will not work for my husband," would he be obligated to revoke? In other words, she's just talking about her husband. That would give him the ability to divorce her.
Well, we said earlier that if he divorces her, theoretically he can take her back. By him, by that point, the netter kicks in. So he can be maverick now, so it shouldn't kick in vis-a-vis him.
I'm just wondering, if she didn't specify this person, I thought the fact that she said "you" and not "my husband," she was making it particular.
He is the husband.
I know he's the husband. But then he divorces her, and then he remarries her, and then once he's remarried, if that took effect, he wouldn't have to do it anyways. He wouldn't have to revoke, because now he's the husband again. So I thought the Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's issue was that she had specified him as a person, so that it was going to apply at all times.
I understand your question now, and I'm not sure of the answer.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, have a wonderful day. Tomorrow I'll be back again in person.